Hello everyone, this is Tom Uran, author of Seriously Risky Business, and today I'm here with the Gruck. G'day Gruck, how are you?
Hello, hello.
This week's Between Two Nerds is supported by Proofpoint, and I've got an interview with Proofpoint's Selena Larson coming out on this channel this week as well, so be sure to catch that. I'd also like to thank the Hewlett Initiative Cyber Foundation for their support too. So this week, Gruck, one of the things I wrote about was the US government takedown and disruption of snake malware. So snake malware is an FSB, a Federal Security Service of Russia malware that they've been working on and redeveloping and rebuilding for 20 years, almost 20 years. I was just astounded by that. And we thought we'd talk today about all the things that snake malware tells us that no one else on the planet is going to talk about. Things like what it tells us about the organizational culture of the FSB, all those nuggets that were in the report, but is probably not the focus of most people, except for us.
Nerds like us.
Yeah.
Ignore that stuff. Let's look at what this tells us about the bureaucracy behind it.
That's right. Yeah. So the report is tremendously detailed. It's like 48 pages. A lot of it deals with just the bits and bytes of command structures and different queuing structures that they had and how you send messages and how it was encrypted and how the encryption was faulty. But particularly in the beginning of the report, there's nuggets about the FSB that I wasn't aware of. They're also called Turla. The first thing that struck me was just 20 years. That's a tremendous amount of time.
Oh my God. I know people who are younger than that.
Yeah.
8200 has frontline operators who are younger than snake malware.
Yep.
Yeah. There's 19-year-olds doing cyber stuff, you know, they were born after snake had been deployed for the first time. It's just...
When I became a manager, I had a really good pair of socks that I... and I had kept it from when I was in school because they were just such tremendous socks. And at some point I got old enough and became a manager, and I would have people who would come through and I'd tell them, look, I've got socks older than you. that was a good example of my enlightened management style.
Now get the f*** out of here.
But what do you think it tells you when an organization hangs on? I think of it as hanging on to malware.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a whole bunch of interesting stuff going on here. You know, Turla has used other malware. It's not like this is their one and only thing that after 20 years, it's the only thing they know how to use. But some of the stuff that was being suggested by the report is that this is just like their top tier shelf. Like this is the gold standard stuff. Like they might have other cheap malware that they can use in disposable campaigns, but when they want something that they absolutely positively want to know is always going to be there, then this is what they're using.
The report does say that. I guess there's two options there. One could be that for the really sneaky stuff, you build new stuff and use it the once, and then you've got your commodity stuff that you use all the time. That to me would make sense, but it seems, based on the report, it's the other way around.
That sounds expensive. So think about this. 20 years ago, Russia was pretty broke.
Right, yeah.
Right. They were coming out of the 90s. They weren't exactly in tip-top form anymore. And so probably if you're looking at where you're going to be spending your money, I don't know if you can get budget at that point for, you know, like bespoke new high-end secure malware for every single important operation versus why don't we just invest heavily into one really good piece of malware that we can use?
Yeah, that seems to be what's going on. The report says it's the most sophisticated and it has a rare level of stealth. So those imply that all your eggs in one basket and make it a pretty bloody good basket.
Yeah, and watch that basket. But, I mean, I would hope so after 20 years, right? Like, So I think it's not a bad hypothesis to explore that they might have been pursuing it for fiscal reasons or budgetary reasons early on.
Right, yep.
You know, and then I guess it becomes institutional, right? It's part of the furniture at some point, right? Like, it's after 5 years of using the same malware for your top tier stuff, like, what is year six? You know, it makes sense. And then now you've got people who grew up, joined the unit. They've been using that malware for their entire career.
Yeah. So the part of the report that speaks to that is under attribution. Snake has been a core component of this unit's operation for almost as long as Center 16, that's the unit, has been part of the FSB. So it's like part of the furniture or part of the DNA.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure that, like, Snake has been around for longer than your boss's boss has been at the... But at what point do you think, like, this 20-year-old program is still the best thing that we can field in computers? When we're talking about a Theseus ship, they didn't rename a new ship that they've built completely from scratch. They've been upgrading whatever, but it's the same thing.
Yeah. Right? Have you heard about, at least in Australia, we have a grandfather's axe.
Right, yeah.
Which is the same axe, it's just had 7 new heads and 4 new handles.
Right. That's exactly what I'm thinking. It's like, there's some sorts of software that do last that long.
So do you think in a way that calling it the same piece of malware is not quite right? It's just an evolution?
So I think it's probably the same as the Linux kernel in a way. And this is what I'm sort of getting at, is that there's going to be compatibilities that it has, right? Like, so maybe it doesn't use the version 1 file format and the version 1 protocol, but it's been upgraded and stuff. So it's similar in some ways, right? So I would think that, you know, if you got the smell of the first version, then detecting the second version would probably be easier, right? Because you'd sort of know roughly how it works and what to sort of look for, like how it gets deployed, what the sort of protocols like on the wire would look like, and how it digs in.
Yep. So that's, to me, the big risk, right? That you keep the same, and it gives defenders or other intelligence agencies a history to work off. So they're not trying to rediscover things from scratch.
Exactly. So, like, you know, the tale of the 5 monkeys where there's a banana hanging up above a stepladder and one of the monkeys goes for it and they all get sprayed with water. And so one of the monkeys gets swapped out with a new monkey.
Right.
And when the new monkey tries to go up the stepladder, they all stop him because they don't want to get sprayed with water. So they swap one of the old monkeys with a new monkey. You know, the new monkey goes and now all of them stop him. And eventually you swap them all out. And none of them will go up the stepladder, even though none of them know why.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, is that sort of what happens when you've got malware this old? Like, you get things that operate in a certain way that the people who put it in place are no longer there, and you don't know why. If you've got that sort of longevity and that sort of institutional reliance on this one thing, do you want to be the person who comes out and says, you know, we need to stop using it and we need to use something new?
Change is bad.
Right. And then your new thing gets discovered, right? Who's going to catch all the flack for that? It's that old joke of, like, no one got fired for buying Cisco.
Right. Yeah. Couple of things there. One is that encryption, when it doesn't work, is like a silent failure.
Right.
The other thing I was thinking is that to redevelop malware as competent and capable as Snake sounds really is a lot of work.
Right. It's all written in C. It's not some guy 2 years out of university banging away on this. This is going to be like your hardcore senior top tier developers. There's not that many of them. And could you afford to take them off of Snake and make them do something new from scratch that's not at all like Snake?
Yeah. So that sounds to me like you're thinking that they're a bit capacity constrained. Well, constrained enough that they're not doing the absolute best in terms of OPSEC, which would be to turn over your malware quite frequently. I don't know how frequently. The other thing that occurred to me is that the internal security agencies, they have this kind of arrogance, because when you're the internal security agency, you're the big dog. You're operating on home turf. you're the person dealing with the police.
Yeah.
You're the one with special powers. It's not like NSA, which is sneaking around in someone else's network, trying not to get caught. So I wonder if that has something to do with the, you know, well, we can accept that risk because what's going to happen to us?
Yeah, I think once you've got something that's 20 years old, the just the inertia that gets built up, it's going to be so hard. There's all sorts of things that are going to be super difficult. Here's the thing that's been used at their top tier for 10 years, you know, like only at the 10-year mark, you come in and you say, you know what we need to do, you know, for security reasons, we need to develop something new from scratch, replace this old thing that you, my boss, championed and pioneered and got into place and got promoted for. We need to ditch that and put in my thing now instead.
Yeah, you need a very, very good reason. And I think this 48-page report is that very, very good reason. So one of the other interesting things to me is in the report, it said that mostly the developers are in this place called, and I'm going to butcher the Russian, Ryazan, which is a couple of hours from Moscow. But it talks about many of the operators using Snake to its full potential, as well as FSB operators who appeared to be unfamiliar with Snake's more advanced capabilities. These observations serve to illustrate the difficulty in using such an advanced toolset across the various geographically dispersed teams comprising this unit within FSB Center 16. Now, that the geographic diversity occurred because the FSB came out of the KGB. So I thought that was fascinating that you've got this history from the Soviet Union that results in operational mistakes in malware in the 2020s.
Yeah, so I think that the geographical thing, what's interesting there actually is it suggests that the training for the malware is not systematized, and it's not, like, I want to say professional. It's just it doesn't have a, you know, we'll send you to your basic Snake boot camp, and then once you've come back, you've done your, you know, 3 months of whatever, we'll put you on, you know, intermediate Snake, and then after that, you can take your advanced Snake certification.
Yes.
You know.
Yep. With, like, standard process.
Right. And things that you would expect, like, okay, we're going to put you in a test environment, and, you know, you're going to need to troubleshoot a Snake installation, and then complete the mission and achieve these things. You've got 24 hours. It seems to me that people who get like Cisco certified are more professionally trained than people using Snake.
Yep. Right?
Like, because there's a path of training and testing and all this stuff, and people at the end of it, you can trust that they have a specific level of knowledge, and it seems to me...
This seems more variable.
Right. Which strikes me as a sort of thing where you basically have Alexei at the office who's been using Snake for 8 years is like the local expert. So everyone at that office who has Alexei to go to powers up their skill set really well because they're taking, you know, Alexei's deep knowledge. But if you go to another office where they don't have someone with that, then you're just sort of muddling along as best you can based on the introductory tutorial and the how-to.
Yeah. So it does say that the main developers were Ryazan-based. Ryazan-based FSB officers used it to conduct worldwide operations. These operations were different from others launched from Moscow or other FSB sites based on infrastructure and techniques. So it seemed like the Ryazan people are, well, they're co-located with the developers.
Yeah, they were the top tier cyber team.
And then
as of May 9th.
other parts of the organization had different roles and I guess were not as well versed in how to use the software.
I'm going to speculate, and it might be completely unfounded, but that seems almost like the sort of thing where knowledge is kept internal.
Right, yeah, compartmentalized, yeah.
Yeah, but not necessarily for security reasons. That might be how they sold it. But as a, let's say, job security. Right? If you're the Ryazan developers and you're doing all the stuff, you've got your like top tier capabilities that you're using. The Moscow guys, they're obviously where the cyber should be located because it's Moscow, not Ryazan. But that's not where your home is. That's not where so you're probably not going out of your way to make sure that the Moscow team is completely up to scratch, you know.
Keeping a few things.
Yeah, you know, it's just the they know more than enough to do their job. You know, they don't need to know more. Speculation, but that's sort of how it feels to me.
Yeah, so one of the other interesting things, the FBI disruption, they understood Snake well enough to convince it to wipe itself or overwrite itself. And so they were able to command it to basically nuke the malware. But they only did that in the US because of, it was a court order.
Yeah.
And the court order only actually lists 8 computers. So are you surprised that there's only 8 in the States?
8 seems a really small, like if you've got your top tier stuff, one assumes that there's more than 8 targets, right? Particularly because it's a P2P network. So presumably that's everything, like the nodes, the clients.
Yeah, I was surprised how few it was as well. And partly I was wondering if that was just, it is their extremely stealthy malware, so they don't deploy it much. Partly I was wondering whether it's the roles that the FSB has. Maybe it's just less focused on the US. I mean, they're also called Turla, and Turla has done a lot of stuff overseas. So I was just curious about all those things.
Yeah. So in theory, the SVR, which was made from the KGB's first chief directorate, which was foreign intelligence. Right, so SVR is supposed to do foreign intelligence, and FSB is supposed to do everything else, which they interpreted very broadly as everything within the borders of the former USSR as being sort of internal,
yep.
Right? What they call the near abroad. But they're not super strict. As I recall, there has been FSB operations that have been caught inside Europe.
Yeah, it talked about a NATO country and a few other things. So maybe it's some combination of all those things, operational security, just slightly different targeting.
There's probably turf wars. There's still some tension internally between what exactly counts as FSB territory. Like they probably try and push fairly heavily of their like.
Yeah. I mean, the report says within the US, the FSB has victimized industries including education, small businesses, media organizations, as well as critical infrastructure sectors including government facilities, financial services, critical manufacturing, and communications. So, I mean, there's more than 8 sectors there. that makes me also think that they must maybe just pull back at some point, right? They have a purpose, use malware on a device, and then pull back when they don't need to. But it's also not clear. Victimized doesn't necessarily mean collected. It just might mean that was a relay box.
Right. And it can also mean that, well, the FSB controls a guy at Conti and Conti hit this. Therefore, by the transit of property, the FSB was involved in attacking.
I guess the other thing is it says within the United States, the FSB has victimized. It doesn't say Snake has victimized.
Well, maybe here's the other thing is maybe the other departments, like everywhere that's not Ryzen, is not super thrilled about using Snake.
Right.
It's old, it's difficult, it's got all these weird arcane options. It's the thing that the neckbeards, you know, their ratty T-shirts over in Ryzen use, you know.
Well, they might not even know about it, right? If they...
Indeed, right? And so you would probably have, you know, extensive deployment for those top tier, you know, the A-list targets that are being given to the Ryzen team. But that might not intersect with, you know, US targeting. I mean, to me, 8 sounds so small that it feels more like those are nodes that happen to be deployed at like AWS and that they wouldn't be actual deployments so much as just P2P nodes used for proxying and whatever. 8 just seems tiny. Remember, for example, like the Equifax hack, there was something like 32 web shells that got installed on those boxes. You know, there were way more than 8. And that was, you know, one hack of one place, but admittedly very poor tradecraft, but, you know, 8 seems very small.
In my write-up of the Snake takedown, I mentioned 2 GRU botnets that the US had taken down in, I think, 2018 and last year. And the first one Cisco estimated that there were over 500,000 infected devices. It's worldwide.
For readers at home, just 8 is a lot less than 500,000.
I thought that was a fascinating look into the risk appetite of the GRU as compared to the FSB. We'll just infect everything that we can find, regardless.
That is another sort of OPSEC, is that, you know, if you've got that many infections, which ones were they actually looking at?
Right. It's in biology, they have a concept called competitive inhibition, where you just swamp something with something else, and you just basically cover it with noise.
That is a great term. I mean, I've been using chaff as the term, but competitive inhibition, that's much better. So when I look at OPSEC, that's one of the things that comes up, is just provide so many options that it's too expensive to figure out what's actually the real target.
Yeah.
Like, a bunch of the stuff feels to me now that it's this one team that's still using it. Right. Like, that there's these other teams at FSB that can use it and sort of sometimes roll it out because they need a thing that does what it does. But it's not necessarily their go-to tool.
Right. They did say, the report says that they've snakes code and multiple snake-related tools have been either a starting point or a key influence factor for a diverse range of other highly prolific implants and operational tools in the Turtler family. So it's like the branch of the tree of life, I guess.
Right. So I've got a question for you about that. Based on the report and what it says, how big do you think the teams are? Is this the sort of malware that a lean and mean small team would be using? Is it a huge team that is all standardized on one thing? Any thoughts?
My gut feeling is that it's not that big a team, because it seems like they've carved off parts and reworked parts at a time.
Uh-huh.
I think if you were to redevelop the whole thing, that's a huge team effort for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
But if you're carving off parts and just redeveloping them as you need to, I think that's much smaller, is my guess. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I agree, particularly because of the, you know, it's all written in C. It doesn't have a lot of bugs. There's jokes and things like that going back and forth, which is just developer culture, but it's also what you get with an insular team that's just been working on the same thing for a long time.
Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting that there's all these little strands in there, all these little hints, I guess, that give you clues about what may be going on.
I always find that stuff so interesting. Like, just the glimpses into, I wouldn't say corporate culture, but sort of, I guess here we would say the culture of the snake.
What I was wondering is if, am I reading too much into those little things? Or did the authors put it in there specifically for me to pick up?
Tom is going to love this. I think those sort of things come through because they're hard to keep out when you're excited by them.
Thanks a lot, Grok.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Good talking to you.